Don't know how aware and to what degree the guys here are aware of the fact that we're in the middle of a major war. In fact, we're in the middle of what looks like, as far as the army spokesman keeps saying, what is going to be a war that is more major than the war that we've had here in the last 20 years. At this point in time, when we're sitting here, there are thousands of kids who are your age or younger who are being called up and are being sent together with, according to the latest reports, even though the censorship is very strong and the army put a complete censorship on what's going on, but according to eyewitness reports, there are hundreds of tanks moving down towards the Gaza Strip at this point in time. And by the end of the week, by Shabbos, they expect to be thousands of extra troops moving towards Gaza. And by the middle of next week, if the government gets its way, there's a Knesset vote on Sunday, then there'll be tens of thousands. They will call up the entire reserve units. There are kids out there who are putting their life at stake, and they're your age. They're exactly the same age as you guys. And they and their parents don't know whether they're going to come back on Sunday or they're going to come back on Monday. Which dictates a certain element of behavior on our part over the next few days. First of all, the people who are sitting in shelters because they're being continuously bombed. And you're talking about hundreds of thousands of people. Plus the soldiers. Who are being Moisa Nefesh, the Derech HaTeva, to protect the people living here. And therefore there is a certain responsibility that we have. That over the next few days, we also do our bit. And therefore one would expect that over the next few days, one takes life a little bit more seriously and one puts in that little bit of extra effort in one's learning and in one's davening in order to be mishtatef with the tzora which is taking place for Klal Yisrael at this point in time. And at least be mispalo that the situation doesn't deteriorate. One of the most complex, most interesting personalities that appears in Torah, and in fact appears on the scene in the history of mankind, appears in this week's parasha. First appears in this week's parasha. And that's Esav HaRosha. In fact, every single piece of information that we find in this week's parsha, and in fact in the following parshas, relating to Esav, create problems, create questions, and create difficulties. And we'll just mention a few of them, and there are many more. The parsha starts off by saying that Rivka becomes pregnant. She's carrying twins, even though she doesn't know it at the time. Vayisreitzetzu habonim bekirbo. And these two boys that she's pregnant with, Vayisreitzetzu bekirbo, they're agitated inside her. And it's causing her difficulty in the pregnancy, the fact that these two kids are agitated. They're moving around. The Midrash, which Rashi quotes, explains what does it mean that Yisraitzu Abonim Bekilba, that B'shoa Shehesa Imedes Abotei Kneisiyos Ubotei Midrashis, that when she was standing in proximity to a Bes Midrash, to a Bes Knesses, Yaakov Mefarches Lotzeis. Yaakov struggled to leave his mother's womb and to go into the Bes Midrash, to go into the Bes Knesses. Whereas when every time she was standing in the proximity of a Bes Avodah Zarah, then Esav started agitating, and Esav started struggling to leave his mother's womb in order to go into the Bes Avodah Zarah. The Marasho in Masechet Sanhedrin on Daf Tzadiyom Aleph Amud Beis, where there is a Gemara which discusses when does the Yetzirah hit a person. Does the Yetzirah hit a person when he is created within his mother's womb, or does the Yetzirah start by a person when it leaves its mother's womb? Is the Yetzirah an integral part of the person already as the embryo develops within his mother's womb, or does the Yetzirah only come into effect and only exist, says the Gemara, when the embryo finally leaves the mother's womb and the baby is born? And the maskana of the Gemara, based on a pasuk, Pesach Atos Revitz, is that the Yetzirah only starts attacking a person when it's born. There is no Yetzirah prior to birth. There is no Yetzirah when the embryo is in the mother's womb. Ask the Marsha that Lichura, the Medrash, which Rashi brings here at the beginning of this week's Parsha, constitutes a direct contradiction to that Gemara. Because the Medrash here is saying that Esav, every time his mother stood in proximity to a Beis Avodah Zarah, was mafarches, that he wanted to go out and go into the Beis Avodah Zarah. According to the Gemara in Sanhedrin, in his mother's womb, a child doesn't have the Yetzirah, so why on earth was Esav interested in going to the Beis Avodah Zarah? On the Pasuk, a few Pasukim later, where the Pasuk says, Vayigdalu hana'orim, that the children grew up. Vayhi Esav ish yedei atzayid. Esav was an ish yedei atzayid. Ish sodeh. Two descriptions of Esav. An ish yedei atzayid and an ish sodeh. V'yakev ish tom yeshiv aholim. And Yaakov is a, two descriptions of Yaakov. He is an ish tom, he is a yeshiv aholim. Rashi brings, again, Chazal from Medrash Rabbah, but Rashi doesn't quote the Chazal verbatim from the Medrash Rabbah, but Rashi explains more about Arichas, what the Medrash is saying. And the Medrash says that Kol Yud Gimel Shona, for the first 13 years of their lives, of Yaakov and Esav, Holchu LeBeis Sefer, they went to the same school. U'shneim Boim LeBeis Sefer, and they came back from the same school every day. There was absolutely, as Rashi explains it, nobody saw any difference between the two of them. They looked like twins. They were copies of each other. And they behaved as copies of each other. There was no significant, apparent difference in the behavioral mode of Yaakov or the behavioral mode of Esav for the first 13 years of their lives. Kivin shenasu b'nei yud gimel, when they became 13 years old, Zepirish Labotim Midrashis of Zepirish LaAvodah Zarah. One took one direction, the direction of the Beis HaMedrash, and the other took the other direction, the direction of Batei Avodah Zarah. Tosfos, in his commentary on the Chumash, asks on this Chazal that Lichura, this Chazal is not accurate, because Esav didn't start going in the wrong direction when he was 13 years old, as the Medrash says. Esav only started going in the wrong direction when he was 15 years old. How do we know that? So Mefurash Rashi, again quoting Chazal. On the Pasuk, Vayozed Yaakov Nazid Vayove Esav Min Asodev Hu Ayef, that Yaakov's cooking for himself the lentils, And Esav comes running in, and Esav's hungry, and the whole story of selling the Bechira. The Pasuk says, Eisei Hayyim, sorry, the Chazal say on that Pasuk, that Eisei Hayyim, that day, and Rashi quotes it on that Pasuk, that day, Meis Avram, Avram died. Why? Because the Rebbe Meir Yerushalayim didn't want that Avram should see his grandson, Yetzer Tavus Ro, acting in a wrong manner. If you make the cheshbon, on that day, Esav was exactly 15 years old. Say the Baalei Tosfos, if so, that contradicts the Chazal, which say that he was 13 years old. To which Tosfos brings a Yerushalmi. That the Yerushalmi says that from the age of 13 to the age of 15, Esav was already behaving wrongly. But he wasn't doing it b'fahesya. He was only doing it b'tzina. He was doing it privately. He wasn't making it public. And that's what Chazal say when they say that at the age of 13 there was a diversion of interest and that one went in one direction and the other one went in the other direction. In reality, it's true. It happened at the age of 13. It only became public knowledge, says the Yerushalmi. People only saw it when he became 15 years old. Which means that according to the Yerushalmi, Hulichura is not arguing with the Maimon Chazal, which says that when he was in his mother's womb, he was already struggling to go to the Bati Aveda Zara. A very interesting phenomenon took place here. In his mother's womb, he wants to be an Eved Aveda Zara. He gets born, it disappears, as it were. No more. 13 years, nothing happens. Then, for 2 years, he again wants to go to the Bati Aveda Zara, but it's Petzina, and then at the age of 15, it becomes public. How did it disappear for those 13 years? If it was there already, how are you going to explain that it was there in the mother's womb, even if Chazal say that Yetzer Hara doesn't come until the age of 15? But in this case, it was an exception, or however you're going to understand it, how come it disappeared for 13 years? Then the Torah describes the relationship between Yaakov and Esav and the parents. And what does the Pasuk say? Vayev Yitzchak es Esav kitzayot bepiv. Yitzchak loved Esav, as opposed to Rivka, who loved Yaakov. And all the Mefarshim immediately raised the problem, and the obvious problem. How is it possible? Everybody knows, right? As the Yerushalmi says, from the age of 15 it was public knowledge. Everybody knows that Esav is not acting the way he should be. Everybody knows about the rishus of Esav. Avraham Avinu has to die 5 years before the time when he really should die, in order that he shouldn't experience the riches of Esav, as Chazal say. And yet, Yitzchak, who's a Navi, knew everything about what's going to happen in the future. Dafka hasn't got the faintest idea what his son's doing. He knows nothing. He's blind. Vayev Yitzchak es Esav. And this question is asked by the Zohar. The Zohar asks this question. And the Zohar answers the question and says that there must have been some reason that we don't understand why the Ribbono Shel Olam wanted that the brachas had to come to Yaakov through a manner which wasn't direct, and therefore he had to blind Yitzchok that he shouldn't know what's going on with Esav, in order that he should want to give the brachas to Esav. The Yaakov's going to have to do a miramon in order to get the brachas. This was all planned by the rebellion for some reason which is beyond us. And basically the Ramban says it goes in the same direction. Ibn Ezra goes in the same direction. Everybody seems to take the same direction. Which again doesn't answer the question. In the Pashto Pshat, in the Psukim, how come that Esav has no idea what's going on in front of his eyes? On the Pasuk which describes Esav as being a Yedei Tzayid, Rashi says, B'shem the Medrash, that why was he a day outside? Why is he considered somebody who knew how to hunt? Because he's somebody who knew how to hunt people. He's somebody who knew how to fool people. Why is he considered to be somebody who knew how to fool people? Because he was constantly fooling his father. How was he fooling his father? So Rashi brings a chazal. What do the chazal say? The chazal say that he used to go to his father and say to his father, Abba ayech me'asu misamelech v'esateven. He used to ask his father, how do you take maisa from salt? How do you take maisa from straw? In order that his father should think that he's a medaktik b'mitzvahs. The Baal Tanura, the Maharal of Prague, Rabbi Eliyahu Mizrachi and other Rishonim explain that he dafka asked Yitzchak about these two things, about salt and about straw, because they are two things which are potter from Maisa. And even Midrabbanon, there's no Maisa on straw, and there's no Maisa, even Midrabbanon on salt. And therefore he was trying to impress his father, look how from I am, that I even take Maisa from things which even Midrabbanon, you're not mechuyav to take Maisa from. Says the Taz, in his Pirush on Chumash, that what he had to go and ask his father. All he had to do was stand in front of his father and take Maisa from Melech and take Maisa from Tevin, and his father would see what a big machmer he is. You have to go and ask him. If every time his father was sitting at the table and his father saw him taking Maisa from Melech, he would know that he's a big machmer, he takes Maisa from Melech, even though Midrabbanan, you're part of him taking Maisa from salt. Even more than that, one of the positive sides of Esav is that he was tremendously particular about the mitzvah of Kibud Av. Chazal go at great lengths to describe the greatness of Esav in reference to Kibud Av. Now his father obviously didn't take Maisa from Melech and Maisa from Tevin, because otherwise it wouldn't have been any point in him asking the question. So how come this guy who's so makbid to be mechaber his father, right, is day in, day out, basically turning around to his father and saying, you're not from, I am. I take Maisa from Melech and from Tevin. Plus the fact, if you look at the language, what's the language? The language is, how do you take Maisa? He asked his father, how do you take Maisa from Melech? What do you mean, how do you take Maisa? If you're using the expression Maisa, then you know how to take Maisa. What does Maisa mean? A tenth, to take a tenth. What's the difficulty in knowing how to do it? Elamai, you're saying to your father, you don't know how to take Maisa, then your stump's saying you're an Amoritz. So why is it showing anything which is positive about you? And Bichlal, why did Chazal use the expression medaktek b'mitzvahs? Should be machmer b'mitzvahs, or something which is more fitting in that direction. And besides the fact, why did he have to use that in order to impress upon his father what a great person he is? As we said, Chazal say that when it came to the mitzvah of Kibud Av, he was unique. Omer Reb Shimon ben Gamliel, Reb Shimon ben Gamliel said, Kol yomai isi mishamis es abba. I am the prototype of how a person should be mekayim the mitzvah of Kibud Av. Reb Shimon ben Gamliel said about himself, he said, look at the way I am mekabed my father, Gamliel, and you'll know what Kibud Av is all about. And yet, says Reb Shimon ben Gamliel, lo shimashti yisei echad mimeo sheshimesh eishav ezoviv. I don't come to 1% of being mekayim the mitzvah of Kibud Av in the way that Esav did. So if that's the case, surely that was enough for Esav to think that he's a tzaddik. Why did he have to go asking him questions about being ma'asa the melech? Vayove Esav min ha-sodeh, says the pasuk. Esav comes from the sodeh, v'hu oyef, and he's tired and he's hungry, and Yaakov is cooking, and he says to Yaakov, give me something to eat. Again, says Rashi, quoting Chazal, Chomesh Averis Ova Isi Rosha Bayemahu. He was tired because he was over on 5 Averis on that day. What were the 5 Averis? Baal Nara Murosa. He was over on the Isa of Aroyas, of Gilu Aroyas. Horages HaNefesh. He was over on the Avera of Shvichas Domim. Kofa Bitchias HaMesim, the Kofa Be'ike. He was over on the Isa of Avera Zora. And he gave up the Bechera, which means he didn't believe in Tchias HaMaisim. Hini Olech Lomus, he says. Who cares? It's not important. I'm dying anyway. So here you've got a guy who's over the three Averis Hamuris that exist, and yet he's the world's biggest Machmir in Kibudav, and yet, even though he's over on Gilu Aroyah, Shvichas Domim and Averis Zorah, and the whole world knows it, his father's blind. He doesn't see anything at all. So I want to try and explain this. I don't know whether I'm right or not, but I want to try and explain this. But I want to explain it by introducing another question. Esav was a Rasha. According to Chazal, as we said, Esav was a Rasha from the moment he was created in his mother's womb. If so, how should the Torah have described him? Yaakov was a tzaddik. He was a tzaddik from the moment he was created in his mother's womb, but he's already pushing towards the Beis HaMedrash. How should the Torah describe him? So l'chura, what the Torah should have written about Esav is that Esav harasha. And what should the Torah have written about Yosef? That Yosef is a tzaddik. We don't find anywhere in the Torah the expression Esav is a rasha. We don't find anywhere in the Torah the expression Yaakov a tzaddik. Noach is tzaddik. Yaakov doesn't say he's a tzaddik. Esav, Chazal says he's a rasha. Esav a rasha. Torah doesn't say he's a rasha. The only thing that the Torah can say in order to describe in a nutshell who's Esav and what is Esav is two things. Yedea tzayid ish soda. The only thing that the Torah can find to describe Yaakov, not tzidkus, ish tom yeshevah, which means that the Torah has come to tell us something. Now we know something about Esav. We know that Esav was a believer. We know that Esav had a tremendous koach emunah. How do we know that he had a koach emunah? Because he believed in the brachas. He believed in the brachas to the degree that he was willing to be meisa nefesh in order to get the brachas. We're not holding that to Nadrega. We all of us believe that if we go to Northern God, if we go to Abraham Kanyeski and he gives us a bracha, it's going to be fulfilled. None of us are willing to be meisa nefesh for it. Why? Because we believe, but there's a limit to what we believe. We believe if it works. If it works, in retrospectively, we believe. But melechatchila to be meisa nefesh for it? Yeah, he was a tremendous maimon. You see what his reactions were. He went crazy. And he pleads with his father, please give me the bracha, give me the bracha. What do you need a bracha for? You're a kaifin tchias ha-meitim, you're an avid aveda zaria. So what do you care if you get a bracha, you don't get a bracha? Well, you think your father's got magical powers? He hasn't got magical powers. If you're saying that you think the bracha means something, then there's a Ribbono Shel, because the only power of bracha that your father has is because it's coming from the Ribbono Shel. So if he's going crazy that somebody took the brachas away from him, and that he wants the brachas, that means he believes that the brachas have something behind them. If he believes that the brachas have something behind them, then he's a maimon. We live under a false impression. We live under the impression that chatoim, averis, it's something which is dependent upon actions. Person does X action, Y action, Z action, he is labeled as a Rasha. It's the action that turns him into a Rasha. It's the Maisa that he does. It's what Rabbi Lopchin would call the naughty thing that he did. Right? That's what turns him into a Rasha. The truth of the matter is that we also think that that's what a tzaddik is. We think that a definition of a tzaddik is actions. Somebody who does actions A, B, C, D, and E, he's a tzaddik. Because only tzaddikim do those actions. People who aren't tzaddikim don't do that. We think that people who are apikosim, That's an intellectual understanding which results in a position of philosophy which dictates that I have to be an Apikoros. That's how we understand it. And when the person went through an intellectual process and came to a certain philosophical conclusion, and he has no choice but to be an Apikoros, to be an atheist, to be whatever it may be. The truth of the matter is that's not the case. The truth of the matter is that actions, thought processes, whether they're l'tov or whether they're l'ra, they're all coming from somewhere. There's a sheirish, there's a root. Why a person acts in a certain way, there's a root as to why a person thinks in a certain way. There's something which is energizing it. It's coming from somewhere. The great Panovich Mashgiach, Chaskel Evenstein, Zechani Bracha, says a very, very telling point. And he says the following. He says, Ish Yedeya Tzayed, Ish Soda, is coming to define what was the Shoresh, what was the source, what was the root for the negative behavior of Esav. Where were the Chatoim of Esav coming from? If you want to know where Chet comes from, says Reb Chaskel, if you want to know where Maisim Roim come from, if you want to know even where Apikorsus comes from, it comes from one thing. It comes from a root, from a midah, which exists within the person, which the Torah defines as being Ish Yedeya Tzayed. And therefore you can grow up in the house of Yitzchak, and you can have Yitzchak as your father, and you can have Rivka as your mother, and you can have Avraham Avinu as your grandfather, and Sarah as your grandmother. If you have this midah of Ish Yedeya Tzayed, it can result in you becoming an Esav HaRosha. It will result in you being a Maimim, on the one hand, and it will result in you also being a Rosha, on the other hand. And it's not only the Midah of Ish Yedeya Tzayed, there's a second Midah as well, which plays a role, and that's the Midah of Ish Soda. So what are they, these two Midahs? So Reb Chaskel says the following. He says a tremendous psychological analysis of how human beings work. And he says the following. He says that if you look in Rashi, Rashi says, what's Ish Soda? So Rashi defines Ish Soda as being the following. Odom Batel. A person who's doing nothing. Tzoda, he's hunting Bekashtoi Chayas Va'ifas. With the bow and arrow, he's hunting animals and fowl, animals and birds. What's an Odom Batel? What does it mean, an Odom Batel? Person who's doing nothing. Adam Bottle, when a person does nothing, what does that mean? That means he's unwilling to accept upon himself any type of responsibility whatsoever. He doesn't want he doesn't want something which to him represents avdus. And therefore, Shevel Tais Odev, do nothing. I don't want responsibility. The easiest way of getting out of responsibility is lying in bed looking at the ceiling. You're not responsible for anything. You have no responsibility whatsoever. But an integral part of that, of not wanting to take responsibility, an integral component of not wanting to take responsibility is that you're not thinking about your circumstance at all. You're not thinking about yourself at all. And you certainly aren't thinking about the future. In other words, you can't accept upon yourself responsibility. And therefore what? Therefore do nothing. Either the fact that I'll do nothing will affect my future. I don't think about my future. I don't believe that what I'm doing in the present will affect the future. It's all part of the same thing. In other words, a lack of any type of thinking process about what does the future hold in store is non-existent because I don't want to take upon myself responsibility, and part of responsibility is thinking about the future. That's an integral part of responsibility. What's going to be with me? Therefore, I do nothing. Therefore, I'm another bottle. Where does that come from? Says Reb Chaskel. How would you put that trait into one word? Who do we know that doesn't think about the future, that's not willing to take responsibility? We all see it the whole time. Children. A child. A child doesn't think about the future. A child doesn't think about the outcome. A child doesn't think about what the process is. What does a child do? He's spontaneous. He wants something, he takes it. He doesn't want something, he does nothing. Says Reb Chaskel, Yedeya Tzayid is the middah of childishness. That's what it is. Calls it yaldus, middah say yaldus. Middah, being a child. And he says the middah of yaldus has nothing to do with age. You can be 90 years old and you can be a child. And you can be 5 years old and you can be an adult. Because adult and child has nothing to do with age. Adult and child is simply how much do you think about what are the consequences? How much do you think about what I'm doing? Ish soda, says Reb Chaskel, is the same thing, in fact. What does ish soda mean? Some Chazal say ish soda hefka kesoda. No boundaries. Spontaneous. You can tell a kid 5,000 times, do not put your hand in the fire, it's dangerous. If the flame is flickering in a certain way and it's attractive, he'll try to grab it. You can explain to him from today till doomsday, in scientific terms, what happens to the human hand when it comes into contact with something which is the temperature of 400 Fahrenheit. It will have no effect whatsoever. You will tell him that he will end up without a hand. Honest. Children act with spontaneous reactions. I want it, I'll take it. Boom. And what do children do when you say to them, I will not let you take it? I will put you in a position where you can't take it. They will lie on their back, kick their feet, wave their hands and scream and go into a tantrum. Why? Because they can't be constricted. They can't be told what to do. They have to be botel. They have to be doing nothing. In addition, says Reb Chaskel, if a person lived in that way, he would go off his mind. Because at the end of the day, how long can a person sit lying in a bed looking at the ceiling doing nothing? You get bored out of your mind at the end of the day. Unless you can do something else as well. Which again is a direct result of the childishness. And what's that? You can convince yourself that what you're doing is something productive. If you can convince yourself that what you're doing is productive, then it's fine. So therefore, in order to be a yeshiv batel, you have to be a shakran. You have to be a liar. You have to be somebody who can fool. You have to be somebody who knows how to fool yourself. If you can't fool yourself, there's no way you can do it. And somebody who knows how to fool himself is even better at fooling other people. Because it's much more difficult to fool yourself than it is to fool other people. That's an ish soda, an ish yedeya tzayid. Yaakov was emes. Anybody who's looking for the truth thinks constantly about the future. That's what he does. He thinks about the future. He thinks about what the effects are. He thinks about what's going to be the end of the story. That was Yaakov and that was Esav, says Reb Chaskel. I want to take it a stage further. There's another element that exists within the middah of childishness. And that is dependence upon parents. That's also a middah of a child. A child is dependent upon his parents. A child can't face being taken away from his parents. Ad kidei kach that it plays a role in halacha. We find halachas which are totally on the fact that it's a tinei katzorich le'imoy, needs its mother. Samuch al shulchan aviv, needs its father. That's also a midah of childishness. But it's a midah of childishness which also involves a lot of self-deception. Because how do we get around it? We prove to ourselves that they need us more than we need them. It's also part of the midah of childishness. On the other hand, it struck me that you find a flip side to this. Childishness, Reb Chaskel takes on the negativity of childishness. But there is a positivity in childishness as well. It's psukim. The Novi Yeshaya says, Kina Yisrael. The Ribbono Shel says, Kol Yisrael like a child. And therefore, Aveyo, therefore I love them. Haben Yakili Ephraim Im Yeled Shashuim. Midei Dabri Bezoch Haskarana. Yeled Shashuim. So how do the Nevi'im describe Klal Yisrael and the relationship between the Ribbono Shel Olam and Klal Yisrael? The Ribbono Shel Olam loves Klal Yisrael. Why? Because they are Nar, their children. Because they are Yaldei Shashuim. So you see that childishness has a positive side to it as well. What's the positive side? There's a pasuk in the Torah, famous pasuk. And the pasuk in the Torah says, Vatiftach, that the Bas Parai opened up the teva that she found floating down the Nile. Vatir'eyu is hayeled, and she saw inside it was a child. Vehine nar boicha, and the child was crying. Crying is a childish midah, right? Children cry. You take away his candy, he cries. He wants to go to the amusement park and you may say no, he cries. He thinks somebody did him the greatest avla because they were. He was Zayrek Minagag, his paper airplane. And they swung a baseball bat at it in the middle. He's not interested in whether it's Zayrek or it's not Zayrek or what and when. He cries. They destroyed his transatlantic plane. Or his fighter jet. Crying is a childish midah. But Moshe Rabbeinu kept that midah till his dying day. And the same childish cry that Moshe Rabbeinu had in the crib when Bas Parai found him, that was the crying of Moshe Rabbeinu every single time the Klal Yisrael got into a mess and Moshe Rabbeinu had to plead for them to the Ribbono Shel Olam. That crying went with Moshe Rabbeinu from the Nile to the Ma'amid Har-Sinai and from Ma'amid Har-Sinai to Ha-Ivorim, everywhere. Because adults have difficulty in expressing their emotions. It's difficult for an adult to cry. He sees it as being a pegia in his maturity. Mature men don't cry, they take it. Children cry. But Moshe Rabbeinu cried. Vodechi cried. He cried every time he wanted to plead with the Ribbono Shel Olam. If a person wants to be mevakesh from the Ribbono Shel Olam, you have to be meirid mois. And only a nar, only a yeled can be meirid mois. Only a yeled has that freedom of emotions. Children are free with their emotions. They hug you, they kiss you, they cry. Adults are restrained. Children have dreams. Every child dreams how he's going to make it in the future. He's going to be the best engine driver that exists. He's going to be the fireman in the world. That was in my days. Nowadays, he's going to be the Hatzolonik in the world. The dreams. Chalomis, that's a child. Adults think in a box. This is the mature way of thinking. Children don't think in a box. Children are completely out of the box. That's why they come up with the craziest things. That's why they come up with the craziest questions. That's why they come up with perspectives which are so totally new, and they shock, and then the parents sort of say, hey, did he just say that? Like, where did he get that from? That's interesting. That's because they're thinking out of the box. In order to be great, you have to have a certain maturity on the one hand, but you also have to have a certain childishness. If you think inside the box, you never make it. The greatest Rosh Hashivas in the world, how did they get to where they got to? How come the Shimon Shkop, the Bochber, the Chaim Brisker, or even take our generation, take Reb Nachum, take Reb Shmurazovsky, the people that we're quoting the whole time. How did they get to saying what they said? Because everybody understood the Gemara in one way, and they had the capacity to think out of the box. They came in from left field. They came in from somewhere else. They had this midah of yaldus, and therefore they came in from a different angle. Of course, now it's become the box. That way of thinking has become the box. So now if you want to be mechadish, you have to go out of that box. The Maral says the following. The Maral says, Guraria, in his Pirush on Chumash, the Maral says that what was going on inside Rivka's womb has nothing at all to do with Yetzer Tov and Yetzer Hara. And if all these kashas are no kashas that were asked. What was going on inside Rivka's womb is nature. People are born with certain natures. And it doesn't affect Bechira. Kuntres HaBechira, we've spoken about that. Looking at Dessler, Kuntres HaBechira, and he explains why not. That has nothing to do with Bechira. There are people who are born with a more mature nature. There are people who are born with a more childish nature. Everybody has this mix, but some people have the childishness more, and some people have the maturity more. Vilna Gaon says the following. You can be born with a nature which is helping you doing what the Torah wants, and you can be born with a nature that goes against what the Torah wants you to want. It doesn't make any difference. He says it's like two soldiers on a horse. One's got a horse who's naturally fast, and the other's got a horse which is a slow mover. So the one who's got the horse who's got a slow mover is going to have to work harder in order to get the horse to move, that's all. But a horse is a horse. So the Vilna Gaon, human nature is human nature. Some people have immune nature which is faster, and therefore more helpful than in Torah, and some have one nature which isn't. So they're going to have to work harder, that's all. But nature is nature. Yitzchak knew exactly who Esav was. He knew exactly who Esav was. He had no doubts whatsoever about Esav. But he saw one thing. Esav has this midah of childishness. That doesn't mean that he's ogefrekt. That doesn't mean that he has no hope. Because if he's going to take that element in his nature that he has, and he's going to use it in the right direction, if he's going to take that childishness and he's going to use it, let's say, in his thought process, then he's harnessed a midah that he has in the right direction. So yes, initially, he sees what's going on. He sees what's happening with Esav. He sees Esav killing somebody. Who did Esav kill, by the way? He killed Nimrod. That's the story there. When he came back that day and the Medrash says he was over in Shvichas Domim, who did he kill? He killed Nimrod. In Esav's mind, he could have been Mekayim the biggest mitzvah in the world. To be Gyal Tohoro Mikiv Becho. Timche Zecher Amalek. One slight problem. The Medrash says, why did he kill him? He killed him because Nimrod had a nice set of clothing. And he liked the clothing. And he wanted the clothing. That was the reason why he killed him. He wanted Nimrod's clothing. But could he justify it to himself? Did he realize what the ramifications of killing Nimrod could be on a political level? No, he didn't care. He wanted the clothing. did he justify it to himself? Mitzvah. He was over a Nara Murasa. There were no Erusim before Matan Torah. It didn't exist, the concept of Erusim before Matan Torah. Maybe it wasn't a nice thing to do. But there's no such thing as nice, says Esau to himself, and not nice. This is Shulchan Aruch. If it's mutter, it's mutter. If it's asa, it's asa. Don't come to me with these Rabbi Lopian stories. Pasnish. There's no Nara Murasa, therefore it's mine. He went and he persuaded the neighbor's wife to run away with him. So what, says Esau? It's before Matan Torah. Says the Rambam, what is a get before Matan Torah? Says the Rambam, the get is when a woman picks herself up and leaves. So she picked herself up and left and came to me. The fact that I'm a better salesman than her husband, that's his problem. Let him go and read Carnegie's book. What do you want from me? So he justified himself. What are the ramifications of running off with a guy's wife? And he may come after you with a knife. Right? He may come after you with something else. Who knows what can happen? It's the middle of the elders. The middle of the elders do what you want, and you justify it afterwards. And Yitzchak saw that, and he knew that. And he said, don't give up. Why? Because maybe he's going to be a point where he's going to use this middle in the right direction. And if he does use this middle in the right direction, then he'll make it right to the top. Because the people who are mature and have a midas hayaldus and know how to use it, they make it even bigger than the people who don't have it at all. And then he sees the tremendous kibud av. Of Esav. And he's not in his boat. It doesn't tell me anything about him, says Yitzchak. That doesn't tell me anything about him. Why? Because he's got the Midas HaYaldus, and kids who are Midas HaYaldus, they are connected with their parents. And I'm sure, says Yitzchak, if you'll ask him, he'll tell you, he needs me. Poor blind old man, he'd never manage without me. Forget about his psychological problems that he can't part with his children. He's got a name in psychology. And then all of a sudden something happens. And then all of a sudden Esau says to him one day, how are you Maisa, Melech, and Tevin? And then all of a sudden Yitzchak says, wait. There's a future for this kid. Why? Because he started thinking out of the box. And if you think out of the box, you can sometimes get to godless. Why is he thinking out of the box? What did they take Maisa from before Matan Torah? It says by Avraham Avinu, they took Maisa from everything. What is Maisa? A tenth. He knew that. But Melech and Teven are unique. There are two things which exist in the Bria which are unique. They have absolutely no value in and of themselves. They have a minimal value. It might cost you a couple of cents to buy a packet of salt. But it doesn't really have a function, salt, on its own per se. When does salt have a function? Salt has a function when you mix it with something. Straw in itself is worthless. When does straw have a value? When you use it. For certain things, it's got a value. For animal fodder, it's got a value. In fact, the Pasuk says in Shmois that for making bricks, it's got a value. Now Esau turned around to his father and he said to his father, tell me, we take together all the possessions that we have and we're going to take off a tenth. When we calculate the tenth of the melech, and we calculate the tenth of the tevin, how do we calculate it? Do we calculate it per se? Or do we calculate it when it's part of a brick? When it's part of a food? And it could be an afkamina. Because the melech on its own could be worth a cent, and the potatoes on their own could be worth 2 cents, in which case the whole thing is worth 3 cents, in which the maaser is 0.3. But potatoes with salt are worth 6 cents, in which case the maaser is 0.6. So, Dad, how do you do this? Says Esau, 1 minute. He said, this is already a guy who's thinking out of the box. There's hope for him. There's hope for him. When does he... Time goes by, and because Yitzchak feels that there's hope for Esav, he decides he's going to give the brachas to Esav. With this midas hayaldus that Esav has, if he'll use it the way he should use it, together with the brachas that I'm going to give him, he's going to be the ideal founder of Klal Yisrael. And he says to Esav, go. Go bring food, come to me, and I'll give you the brachas. And we all know what happened. What happened? Rivka sends Yaakov. Yaakov has to go in to Yitzchak, dressed up as Esav. What does he go in with? He goes dressed up in the begodim of Esav. He goes dressed up in the begodim of Esav. He walks into Yitzchak. What does the pasuk say? Vayorech es reach begodov. Yitzchak smells the clothing of Esav. He smells that clothing. Vayorech es reach begodov. Say Chazal, al tikre begodov ela boigdov. He didn't smell begodim there, he smelt boigdon. He smelt treachery. Stories of people who became Rishoyim, as Chazal bring later on, and Bitshuva at the end of their days, but became the biggest Rishoyim. What was this beged that Esav used to wear that Yaakov was wearing when he walked in? It was the clothing that Nimrod used to wear when Nimrod was going hunting. And when Esav killed him, he took away the clothing, because that's why he killed him, because he wanted those nice clothes. Where did those clothes come from? Say Chazal, those clothes came from Odom Arishon. That was the levush of Odom Arishon. Nimrod took it from Odom Arishon, Esav took it from Nimrod, Yaakov took it from Esav. In essence, the clothing was 100%. Odom Arishon wore it. Nothing wrong with it. But when Yaakov walks in wearing that clothing, and Yitzchak smells that clothing, he says to himself, whoa, there's a smell about this. This doesn't smell, it's just a beged. This smells of begida. You can say there's nothing wrong with his clothing, but a Marisha wore it, and then Nimrod took it. Says Yitzchak, 1 minute. One minute. Why is he wearing this? Is he wearing this because it's comfortable? Is he wearing this because it's practical? Is he wearing this because it's functional? Or is he wearing this because he's making a statement? This is Nimrod. He smells something here. What does he smell? He smells Boigdov, Leibgodov. He smells... And the Shabbos says there's always connection between the Al-Tikra, between the original word and the word that Chazal make out of it. He smells that the Beged represents Beged. It's a statement. There are many Begodim that we wear that in essence there's nothing wrong with them. They're perfectly okay. If you are a plumber and you spend your days digging around in excrement, then jeans is a very good thing to wear. Because why spoil a good pair of pants? And there's nobody in the world who would say there's anything wrong with it. Because you're wearing it for a reason. But when you're wearing it to make a statement, it's al tikre begodim ela boigdim. When you're trying to make a statement with it, when you're saying I'm identifying with something because I don't want to identify with something else, that's not just being childish. That's not just... That is an act of gida, says Yitzchak. There's no hope anymore for this guy. There's no hope. Because he will constantly use his midas hayaldus in the wrong direction. He's never going to use it in the right direction. And therefore when Yaakov walks in, dressed up as Esav, and he smells this, he chaps already that something's going wrong, but maybe there's still a chance, and he gives him the bracha. When Yaakov walks in, and Chazal say that when Yaakov walked in, he also smelt something. He smelt a Reach Gan Eden, say Chazal. Then he suddenly realized, whoa, good thing that I gave the brachas to Yaakov and not to Esav. Rabbi Yisrael, we have a choice in front of us. All of us have within us a midas of Yaldus. It's up to us. The choice lies with us. We can allow it to express itself in stupid clothing. We can allow it to express itself in Yoshel Bottle. You're sitting there staring at a screen. We can allow it to express itself in watching virtual Schwarzers running around after a ball, not even real ones. We can use it to do nothing and to ignore the future. We can use it to create all sorts of theoretical psychological problems that we have. We can use it in our relationships with parents. We can do all sorts of things with it. Or we can use it in the right direction. And if we use it in the right direction, then we can get somewhere where other people can't get to. There is nobody who walked through the doors or registered in Leivaria, whether he was accepted or he wasn't accepted, who hasn't got an outstanding Midas Hayaldus. We have the cream of the crop here. We have the select group of people who, on the scale of 1 to 10, their Midas Hayaldus is holding somewhere in the region of 3,000. And they have a choice. They can let it run them, in which case they will, at the age of 50 and the age of 60, be doing the same thing that they're doing now, except they'll be doing it with white hair instead of with black hair or with brown hair. They'll still be Yoshev Bottle. They'll still be lying in bed looking at the ceiling and wondering why life isn't happening. Or take it and run with it. Grab it and run with it. You have it, take it. Take it, but use it. Use it for Torah. Use it for learning. And you can steig eis and you become greater than anybody else. Thank you.